build a high-performing culture? This is Culture Architects. Candid conversations with extraordinary leaders sharing their biggest successes, failures, and lessons learned on their culture journeys. Here's David J. Friedman.
Welcome back to another episode of Culture Architects. So our guest today is Meg Newhouse. Meg is a co-founder and CEO of Inspirant Group, which is headquartered just outside of Chicago. In 2007, Meg and her partners founded this company. It's a Chicago-based firm, and they've gotten a lot of attention from the work that they describe, which we're going to go into today, as unconsulting, which is pretty interesting. I want to learn more about this. Inspirant has repeatedly been cited as one of the best places to work in lots of different organizations. And for her part, Megan has shown a lot of intentionality, which is why we have her on our podcast today, about leading that company with a real people-first mindset. And that makes her a great culture architect. So, Meg, welcome to the Culture Architects podcast.
Thanks, David. I'm really happy to be here. And I love the concept. I haven't heard about this. And I'm like, yeah, let's be culture architects. This is great. Yeah.
Well, as we'll talk about, it's all about being intentional. So we use that word architect because I think of architects as people who design something. Mm-hmm. And my experience is that so often cultures happen accidentally instead of on purpose. And right. We like to focus on how do we design a culture in a very intentional way? But let's get a little background behind this. So talk to me first about this whole idea of unconsulting. You must get that question a lot. You feature it on your website. So tell me more about the thought process behind what you guys call unconsulting.
You got it. So Inspirant Group, I just want to make a note. We were founded in 2017. I think you might have said 2007, which is totally fine. I wish we had those extra 10 years under our belt, but founded in 2017, myself and my two partners. And we're all, we'll say, recovering consultants. So we're experienced and we've worked at the Big Four and been on both sides of the table. So both in consulting as well as in-house at different organizations, working with outside consultants that we would bring in to help us on projects. And we realized it could just be done in a better way. So both in the way that we build our team, build our culture internally, and the way that that functions versus traditional consulting. And I can talk a little bit more about the difference between those two, but also in the way that we interact with our clients and what it feels like to bring a consulting team on to supplement an internal team. And so my co-founder and partner Amir had this idea late 2016, and I had my own learning and development boutique consulting firm prior to this. And he came to me and he's like, you know what, I want to start a consulting firm, but I want to do it differently. And I know people are the most important part of any organization, and I know how much you love people, Meg. So would you want to come on and build the culture? And so I originally started the organization as the chief people officer, and my job, which I still think it is today, is to curate and cultivate and care for the culture of our organization.
So let's go a little bit further on this unconsulting thing, and then I want to come back to your role as chief people officer. But when you say that, you know, you want to do it differently, you came from this background and it's got to be a better way to do it. So what is different? What is it that you're doing from a consulting practice that's different from what people would consider to be traditional consulting?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of things, and we ask our team about this all the time. So we've grown. We went from just the three of us to now we have 14 full-time employees, and we have about 35 1099 unconsultants that we still consider part of the Inspirant family. And we ask, you know, how is this different from where you've worked before? They came from the Big Four. They came from larger or mid-sized consulting firms. So internally, traditional consulting firms typically have an up or out mentality. So basically you're climbing the ladder and there's just different levels. So you come in as a consultant, and then after a few years, you get promoted to senior consultant, and then maybe a manager, and then maybe a senior manager, and then maybe a director, and all the time working to be a partner. And what goes into that is a lot of shaking hands and kissing babies, if you will, you know, work hard, play hard. You know, I'm going to bust my butt all day delivering for the client 12 hours a day, but then I also have to go to this networking event, or I have to, you know, go out to dinner with a partner or something like that. And then they also get into, in order to be a partner, you have to be selling. And, you know, we really like to focus on meeting people at their individual levels. So maybe not everybody loves going to a networking event, or maybe not everybody wants to sell work. They just want to deliver work. And so we're hiring people based on their unique skill sets and talents and allowing them to really thrive in those strengths and giving them opportunities to do that. So that's a little bit different. We're a very flat organization and we just want to help people do what they do best and support them to reach their full potential, both inside of work at InSprint Group, as well as outside of work, whatever that means to them, wherever their passions lie. As far as interacting with our clients, we just want to make it easy. We think if you're going to pay money to supplement your team and bring in outside vendors, it should be really, really easy. So again, since we aren't, you know, a huge organization, we don't have a whole lot of bureaucracy and red tape. So, you know, often when you're working with folks on the projects, you're working with the partners or, you know, someone like me, I'm the CEO now, but I also will interact with our clients pretty regularly. It isn't like a traditional consulting firm. So you might have the partner selling the work and then they're gone. they've taken you golfing or out to dinner and they've signed the contract and then they're somewhere else. They're working on landing the next deal. And then junior consultants come in to deliver the work at pretty exorbitant rates for people who might be, you know, a year or two out of school, maybe don't have that much experience. So on average, our team has 20 plus years of experience. And so we've been there, done that. And those are the people that are actually delivering the work.
Got it. So you mentioned going back to this people thing. You mentioned that Amir came to you and said, "Hey, Meg, I know you've always been a people person. So would you come in and, you know, play that role here?" So tell me more about you've always been a people person. Where does that come from?
Yeah, I've been a people pleaser, you know, we could dig in, like, if you want me to lay on the couch and tell you where that started when I was a child, we could go there. But, you know, I've always wanted to make people happy and I've always wanted to help people. I think that's always been in my nature. So growing up, I thought I'd be a doctor. And then I went to the doctor with my daddy to get stitches taken out of his toe. And I'm standing there with the doctor as this is happening. And the next thing I know, I woke up in the other room. Totally so passed out.
That ended your medical career.
Pretty quickly. Then I went to college. I was a psychology major at the University of Illinois and certain I was going to open my own practice, helping children and teens with psychology. And then I moved into the sorority house and I was just kind of a revolving door of listening to my friends with, you know, boy problems, school problems, family problems, which I love, you know, I love being that person to them. But I also was like, I don't know if I could do this for a career for the rest of my life. I just kind of take it all on me. So I really just wanted to figure out what I could do to help people, but also feel fulfilled myself. And, that led me to instructional design, which sounds so crazy, but instructional design is creating learning programs for adults, helping them to learn new process, technology, et cetera. So I started in an IT department as an instructional designer, and I really felt that if I could help people understand their job better, maybe that would help them feel more passion and more connection and want to do their job. So, you know, whether it was knowing how to use this technology to the best of their ability, or as I transitioned into more like leadership skills, I really just wanted to help people feel fulfilled in their job. I feel like we spend so much time in our career, in the work that we do, that you should really, I really think you should love it. I think you should wake up every day and be like, yeah, this is what I want to do. So that's what I hope to do. And that's really translated into what I'm doing at InSprint. And I have now the great pleasure, you know, both as the chief people officer and then transitioning into the CEO role in 2020, that's my job. It really is to make sure my team is matched with work that they love doing and to also support them to have the flexibility they need to do their work for InSprint, but also do what they need to do outside of work as well.
Right. So as you started to, you started to build this company with your partners, when you thought about establishing the culture, so there's a way we want to do things here and you're going to start You're going to attract people, presumably, who want to play the game the way you guys want to play it. And you want to start to build that team. How did you define, so this is the culture we're trying to build? How did that happen?
You know, we were really intentional about it from the get-go. And I'm proud of that. And I was, you know, bringing my co-founders together. So I've got Amir and I've got Chris. And Amir is the business mind and he's, you know, sales and he's the one that's making all those connections. Chris is this like technology genius. I make a joke that we're like the Wizard of Oz, like, you know, Amir's the courage, Chris is the brains, and I'm the heart over here, right? So, so the three of us actually work really well together. And in establishing the company, we had lots of meetings where we'd sit down and talk about really what was so important to us. And despite like Amir doing sales and Chris doing tech, it always just came down to the people. Like, how can we do right by our people? And people to us are our team, they're our clients, and it's the communities in which we live and work. And so that made it easy. Like, if we always had that guiding, you know, light to be like, okay, does this work for people? Is this right by people? One of the first things we did then is we went through a handful of exercises to help define our core values. Now, you know, as culture-wise, you have your fundamentals, right? And these are, and I love that. You know, you have statements and what that means. We've done the same. We just have our three core values, but based on those core values, we have behaviors that we talk about that we expect our unconsultants to exhibit to be showing that they're living our values. We talk about them all the time. We have awards that, you know, if people are living our values. So the three values we established in 2017 and still use to this day are have integrity, care about the greater good, and get it done. And so if you're ever trying to make a decision, if you're ever wondering what's the next right thing to do, you can look at those three values and you could say, does it fit into one of these three guide rails, basically? And if not, then, you know, you probably don't need to do that. I've also put on a layer since I took over in 2020 of pillars. So each year we have pillars that just help to kind of focus on what we're thinking about specifically that year. So this year we're focusing on health, environment, and mindset. And again, we have some definitions around what that means, but we talk about those all the time as well. So I think it's defining, again, right? Culture is going to happen whether you're intentional or not. So defining what it means to be an unconsultant and talking about it regularly and recognizing when folks are living in that feeling or in that intention, right? And that's been really successful. And I think you could ask anyone on the team what our values are and what our pillars are, and they'd be able to rattle them off immediately. Yeah.
So when you say that you talk about them all the time, is there some structure through which you talk about them, or it just comes up in conversations? How do you talk about it all the time?
We, you know, again, intentional. I love the word, but I use it as well.
Well, it is. It's critical.
It is critical. So as I mentioned earlier, we have 14 full-time employees and we have about 30 1099 employees that we consider unconsultants as well. And that's something that we've done differently, I think, than some of our other, you know, brethren in the space. But I when I had my own L&D consulting firm, I was often brought on as the instructional designer, 1099 to deliver some projects, but it was never smooth. You know, just kind of thrown work without really understanding the client fully, without understanding the other people on my team. Oh, here's the project manager, here's the e-learning developer, you know, here's the QA person, whatever. And I, when we first started the company, I'm like, we can't do it that way. Like, anybody who consults with us, whether they have a W-2 or a 1099, that doesn't matter to me. I know there's some legal things we can't do with the contractors, but overall, as far as culture goes, to the extent that our 1099 contractors want to be a part of our culture, I want them to feel welcome. I want them to feel an unconsultant. So they get, I'm looking around, I usually have so much swag around here, David, but I'm looking, they get, you know, they get our swag when they start and they're invited to these intentional meetings where we talk about our values and our pillars. So every month we have the first Thursday of the month are our monthly celebrations where we recognize anybody on the team, whether they're a W-2 or 1099, birthdays, anniversaries, you know, anything else they want to celebrate, buying a new home, getting a new pet, a child graduating from high school, whatever it happens to be. But we have these monthly celebrations. We'll often send, you know, a little gift card or a little, you know, coffee or something to help people feel part of that. The third Thursday of the month is our lunch and learn. Again, another opportunity for us to bring up our values and our pillars. Every week, our internal team of 14, we meet and we have a part of that call where one person, and it rotates every week, talks about, they have a pillar update. And so how have you been living the pillars since you last presented? And they can focus on health or environment or mindset. We have a quarterly all hands. And so at that, we often have people talk about and recognize folks who are living our values. And then we have conversations about the pillars. So this last time we had some giveaways that had to do with either health or environment or mindset. And then at the end of the year, we have our Living Our Core Values Awards. And this is kind of a big deal. So they get a nice trophy and plaque with their name on it. And either, you know, we have someone for Have Integrity, Care About the Greater Good, or Get It Done. There's also a monetary prize. a pretty decent monetary prize that goes along with that. So I'm sure I've forgotten something, but as you can see, you know, this is something that we spend
You've
a lot of
structure
time and
behind
energy and put structure around. And what I've found, you know, I think this goes back to my life as an instructional designer, but, you know, helping with change management efforts, helping adult learners grasp concepts, it's really just being consistent. You know, having consistent messaging, having clear expectations. So people know first Thursday of the month, I go here. Third Thursday of the month, I go here. Every quarter, we have an all hands. Every Friday, we have a newsletter that goes to the team. So it's just kind of, they know the cycle. They know what to expect. And that way, you take out any sort of external noise and they can really just focus on the messaging.
Yeah. There's a, in our culture-wise work, we refer to those as rituals.
That like
rituals
that.
Are things that you do all the time. And the reason they're so important, as you're describing, is they create consistency. That if you're relying upon your discipline and motivation to keep it going, it's hard to do because we get busy with life. Things get in the way. But if there's a routine about it, every Thursday we do this, every Tuesday we do this, every third Wednesday we do that. It's just what we do. It's just the way we operate it around here. And that's what gives it the consistency. So you're not relying upon discipline and motivation. You're using that ritual to create a cadence for your practice. And that's what keeps the consistency going.
I love that. The rituals. Yeah.
Yeah. In the work that I do, and in my books, we talk about an 8-step framework for the 8 steps for how do you really institutionalize the culture? How do you get that culture embedded in all your people? And the first two, which we've been talking about, the first step is how you define, well, what is the culture? If you haven't brought enough clarity to exactly what that is, you're not going to do it very effectively. And the second step is what we call creating rituals. So it's those are the first 2 steps in the 8-step framework is defining what you want and ritualizing the practice of that so that it happens in a consistent way.
Well, so good. You're
right in line with that.
I was going to say, I feel like a model student. Let's keep talking. Let's see if I've got any of the others.
Well, all right. We'll go to the next step. I will tell you that when I created those 8 steps, so those 8 steps are first written about in my first book, which was called Fundamentally Different. And as some of our listeners know, that all came out of the first company that I ran was an employee benefits consulting company with about 100 people. And our culture was all of our success. Everything we did was based on our culture, and we were very intentional about it. Long before culture was popular, this goes back 20, 25 years ago, when nobody was talking about culture, we were really passionate about it. And we did a lot of things in a very intentional way. But this 8-step framework that I was referring to didn't exist in that form. It existed, it was happening, but I didn't put formality to it in terms of this 8-step framework until I wrote my first book. So when I wrote my first book, I thought about, so what did we do? How did we do this so successfully?
Yeah,
well, I guess we first defined our culture and then we created these rituals and then we did, and I came up with 8 things that we did in retrospect, reflecting upon what we had done. And that became the 8-step framework, which we now teach as a model for how do you go about doing it. But the model wasn't created up front. The model was a reflection of what we were intuitively doing that just made sense to me as a leader.
That's amazing.
So we'll go on with it as long as we're going down that path. So the third step in the 8-step framework, which I'm sure you're passionate about, I call it selecting. How do you go about selecting the best people who are going to be a fit for your culture? So you've been very particular about this culture. You're trying to attract unconsultants, as you call them. Not everybody's going to be a fit in the culture that you're creating. So what do you do to make sure that the people you're bringing in, either as contractors or employees, as you noted, they're both representing you, so you want them both on the same page. How do you go about making sure you got the right people?
So, I mean, that's fantastic. And it's been quite a journey. We have been fortunate that much of our growth has been organic. And what I mean by that is it's people who know people. So, you know, we have our team that we started building and then we needed to build it more. And so we went out to our existing unconsultants and we said, who do you know? Who do you know that's looking for a change? And this is even before COVID and the Great Resignation. This is, hey, you know, do you have anybody who's grinding at another consulting firm that's like, this is not for me? And we had, you know, quite a few people that would leave full-time roles to come try us out and were happy with what they found. Because as I was saying earlier, you know, not everybody wants to move into that partner role. Much of our team, I'd say the majority of our team, has family. So they're married and they might have young kids, school age kids, and they don't want to miss out on, this is even before we were all working from home, right? Missing out on, you know, dinner, or, you know, losing time to a commute, or doing the traditional consulting thing where you travel Monday through Thursday. Like, we don't do any of that. We were a remote first company from day one, you know, back in 2017. So we know that you can do your work from anywhere. Sometimes you have to be on site, and sometimes it's good to get people together face to face. We understand the value of all of that, but guess what? You need to be intentional when you're doing that. Create intentional in-person interaction. So, so that was nice to be able to grow organically. We have gone out to market to look for folks to join the team, and then they go through a lot of conversation. So we have a people and culture lead, and she does a great job of kind of doing that initial culture screen. So she'll, you know, talk about our values and have some pretty pointed questions about, you know, how those folks might tie into each of those values, give us some examples of that. And then we start having them, if, you know, they pass that initial culture screen, talking to the leaders on the teams that they would be working on. So Insprint provides transformation consulting services. So people, process, and tech, and we have leaders in each of those different service lines. And so they'll start talking to the people that they would be reporting to and working with, and they can then dig in really into the skills. But again, still always kind of in the bubble of, do you exhibit our core values when we're talking to you?
So this looks like a good place to end for today. We've just heard from Meg Newhouse, and she's the co-founder and CEO of Inspirant Group. In the next episode, Meg and I are going to talk a lot more about how do you select the best people to be a fit for your organization. And we're also going to go into a little more about what it means for Inspirant to be a people-first company.
This has been Culture Architects with David J. Friedman. Join us next time for more insights and wisdom from great leaders in all walks of life. To book David for your next event or to learn more about his writing, speaking, or consulting, go to davidjfriedman.com. Culture Architects with David J. Friedman is a production of CultureWise.